I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to The Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Happy New Year to each and every one of our Tennis Podcast listeners. My name is David Law. I'm a broadcaster for BBC Radio 5 Live and BT Sport on tennis. Don't do anything else, just tennis. That's all I'm good for. Same is true of Catherine Whittaker, except Catherine, she works for Eurosport and she also does ice skating. Happy New Year, Catherine.
Happy New Year, David. Yes, and a new string to my bow for 2017 is horses doing ice skating. The beautiful meeting of equestrian and ice sports was what I was doing on Monday, the 2nd of January. I was commentating on a figure skating horse.
A figure skating horse.
A figure skating horse. I don't really know how better to put it. It was some of the more bizarre commentary I've done in my broadcasting career. It was quite something. It was sort of this big horse called Vikingo doing dressage while a woman sort of skated around him and at various times hung off him as well. It was quite something.
It sounds quite something, yes. Now, this does make me think. We've done over the last few months on Twitter at Tennis Podcast, we've been asking for pictures of your tennis podcast pets because of Rosie the dog, Catherine's dog called Rosie, who gate crashed the show and frankly appears to want to take over and just shunt me out of the way, quite honestly. Well, I hope Rosie's not here today. Is that right?
She's not. No, she's back home at my mum and dad's. But I'm sure she'll be listening.
I'm sure she will. Yeah, seems to have a bit of an ego, that one. Anyway, it does make me think, tennis podcast pets, we've got horses ice skating. Are there any tennis playing tennis podcast pets? That's what I want to know. Anyway, enough of that. Catherine, we actually do have a show, as you know, because we're talking on it right now. The reason is because our listeners have come together to fund the 2017 season weekly show. Amazing. Amazing. They've come together. They've already met our target. We've still got 10 days of our Kickstarter crowdfunding exercise to go. Our next target is to raise enough for 45 Grand Slam daily editions of the show, starting at the Australian Open in under 2 weeks' time now. But we are definitely going to be talking to each other 45 times once a week over the next year. How do you feel?
Yes. We still exist. It's a very odd feeling, isn't it? It's like Y2K, if you can remember that, when everybody, you know, nobody knew whether the world or us human beings would still exist as we knew it post Y2K. But obviously, that all went fine, and the Kickstarter campaign has gone fine. We're bowled over, aren't we? We won't. Well, maybe we will bang on about it because we are, we're just very chuffed. We're very chuffed at the support that's been shown. You know, it still surprises us that anybody tunes in and listens every week, let alone is prepared to chip in their hard-earned money to be able to listen. So we're chuffed. We're grateful. We hope we make the target, the 15 grand target, to do the daily shows because, honestly, I think that's when we're at our best, David, when it's just on the hoof. you know, we're in the mix, in the moment, right there in the heart of the Grand Slams, you know, you grabbing Todd Woodbridge and goodness knows who else that walks past. I really think that's us at our best, and I hope we'll be able to do those this year.
Indeed. Well, I think maybe the Y2K comparison's probably just slightly elevating our own status too much. I don't think we're quite as important as that. But, you know, I'm going to go with it, Catherine. That's absolutely fine by me. Now, can I say, just so that you know, if you haven't yet, go to our Kickstarter page if you want to back the show. There's all sorts of opportunities. My personal favourite moment of the week was when the owner of one of our tennis podcast pets, Charlie the Ferret's owner. This sounds like something out of some very strange television show, doesn't it? But anyway, Charlie the Ferret's
same
owner,
I was commentating on Monday, probably.
Yeah, she decided to up her own pledge, and within 10 minutes, then decided to up it again, all the way to our very top reward level of £350, in order to take on Catherine and myself and student Matt at the predictions competition for 2017, which we'll be rolling out over the next couple of weeks. We now have 4 people who are going to be taking us on, Catherine. I'm feeling very, very confident. How are you feeling?
Well, not confident. What on earth is making you feel confident? No, I'm not feeling confident. But, you know, that's sort of the point, isn't it? The point is that, you know, we advertised it as a way to feel good about yourself for a whole year. So you shouldn't be feeling confident.
Oh, all right. Well, I was until about 4 seconds ago. So anyway, that amused me immensely. And as Catherine has said, we're hugely appreciative of everything that you've all done so far. And if you haven't got around to making your pledge yet, do it right now. Now, on with the show. Catherine, week one of the tennis season. I mean, I'm sure it has been like this for a long while, but I'm still a bit taken aback by how many tournaments there actually are in the first week of the tennis year. I mean, I know a week ago when we were talking, I was complaining about the off-season being too long, which is quite funny, isn't it, given how short it actually is. But I was just getting fed up of having no tennis to follow and watch and talk about. And here we are now with 3 WTA events, 3 ATP events, and the Hopman Cup in the same week. And they're all different time zones. We've got Doha going on as we speak, and Andy Murray's 7-6, 3-all against Gerald Meltzer. We've had Novak Djokovic playing this afternoon. We had Roger Federer this morning in the Hopman Cup, playing doubles as well. And then overnight, all the Australian tournaments like Brisbane and Auckland in New Zealand as well. It's almost too much tennis.
Well, it is too much tennis to watch all of it. You can't possibly be taking in all of it. I won't allow you to complain about it being too much tennis, David, given how much you complained about the sort of 3.5 week long off season and how painful that was for you. It is so much tennis, though. There is never an hour of the day, I don't think, in which live tennis isn't on. And there's, I suppose, you know, 3 250 level an equivalent WTA level events in 1 week isn't that unusual, except add in the Hopman Cup and it suddenly becomes just a bit frantic, doesn't it? And add in the fact that you had Abu Dhabi over last weekend as well, 2 exhibition events technically, but with sort of elevated status given where they fall in the calendar, those tip it all over into a bit of a manic week of tennis. But no, I will not hear of a complaint, David.
No, indeed. What I would say is a little bit like when I'm always amused when one of my colleagues or somebody on Twitter will say, oh, been watching so-and-so practice, hitting the ball well. Always find that very funny, because if tennis players aren't hitting the ball well to a layperson, something's wrong. But anyway, I'm never quite sure how much to read into the first week of the year. What I would say is, Nadal looks in great nick generally. All the top players are winning, pretty much, certainly on the men's side. Serena Williams lost today in high wind in Auckland, which they've had a rough few days with all the rain over there. Venus Williams pulled out as well. I get the feeling, as much as anything, 2 matches in a day with all the rain that was going on was too much. But how much do you take notice of the first week as a form guide? Do you?
I think you ignore it at your peril. You certainly shouldn't ignore it, but equally you take too much from it at your peril as well. I know that's a really offensive answer, but I mean, I think, okay, so let's start with Andy Murray. I was at Eurosport a couple of days ago for my ice skating horse commentary. And
I really must dig that one out and watch. I mean, you know, I'm just...
It is on the Eurosport player. Anyway, it was quite something. There was also a BMX on ice, some acrobats. It was... So I was in Eurosport on Monday because of all the tennis that's going on, and Eurosport is showing almost all of the they're showing all of the men's, and of course BT Sport is showing the women's, but every tennis commentator almost, apart from those that were doing BT Sport like your good self, David, were in the Eurosport offices. Arvin Palmer was there, Simon Reid, Frew McMillan, Guy McCree, all these sorts of people were there. And Simon Reid and Frew McMillan came out of commentating on Andy Murray's doubles loss in the first round of Doha. He quite often enters the doubles in whatever tournament he chooses to play at the beginning of the season. Doesn't mean too much, but Frew's assessment was that Andy Murray looked very, very heavy-legged. He said he looked like he still had the weeks of off-season training in Miami in his legs still, and he needed to sort of run those out of him, play that out of himself. He said he thought he'd be fine in a couple of weeks in Melbourne, but that just at the moment he looked a little bit heavy-legged. And if he does come up against Djokovic, who himself had a very sluggish start against Jan-Lennard Struff a couple of days ago, could be very interesting, could be a lot closer than it was the O2 a couple of weeks ago. Federer's return didn't disappoint, did it? It was magnificent, pretty much, against Dan Evans. But then, what happened this morning against Alex Zverev? Already one of the matches of the year. I had a sneaky feeling. I know it's very easy to say this after the fact, David. I had a sneaky feeling that Zverev was going to get that one and that it was going to go to something like a third set tiebreak. I sort of saw that sort of a scoreline coming, but it nonetheless was thrilling.
Didn't go on the record with that in advance, though, I noticed, Kendra Whitaker.
I wasn't in a rush to do that, no.
No.
Who else have we got? Do you want to take it? You've been commentating on the women's side of things, so you can do that. I saw a bit of Jo Konta coming back to beat Vanya King. Very impressive from her.
From a very slow start, actually.
Incredibly slow start.
But I would say as well, the matches that I've commentated on last night in particular, but brilliant match between Garbiñe Muguruza and Daria Kasatkina. Exactly. A couple of nights ago that was. And Muguruza's had 2-3 setters. I really liked, although I don't think she played magnificently, she certainly played well enough. But the main thing was, it was just nice to see Muguruza looking so up for it, you know, really energized and motivated and as though she was enjoying it out there. Saw a very interesting quote from her. One of our colleagues, Nick McCarvel, quoted on Twitter an interview he'd had with her in which she said her big thing this year, her New Year's resolution, is not to be politically correct. I thought that was fascinating. She says, I'm going to say what I think. I know that it might get uncomfortable and people might not like it, but that's what I'm going to do.
Okay. Interesting.
That's going to be great, isn't it? Imagine if every single tennis player had a sort of truth pill over the next week and had to just say exactly what they think.
I think it would look quite ugly in places, David, don't you think?
I'm definitely going to look into whether that's possible. I think that'd be excellent. Just imagine. Oh,
I believe it. I'll believe it when I see it of Garbiñe Muguruza. I will. But you know, she's one that I've talked about a lot before. Is she's completely clammed up and closed herself off since she's hit the big time. She's become somebody that doesn't give anything away. So to think of her suddenly taking a truth pill and spilling all the beans, everything that's in her head, is quite the turnaround. So I don't know. If she's true to her word, then great, bring it on.
Yeah, I think
I'd love to know what she thinks about things, really.
Me too. That's going to be a good one to follow. Dominika Sibulkova last night I commentated on. She was pretty rusty, actually, early on against Shang Shui, who played wonderfully for a set and a bit, but eventually Sibulkova turned it around and won it. I mean, you see this with the rust they have in their systems. I mean, Kerber today up against Ash Barty, incidentally great to see her back. You may remember the Australian player who retired a couple of years ago to go and play cricket, decided she was pretty disillusioned with tennis, didn't want to play anymore, would rather be a part of a team game, and great to see her back because she's a really unusual talent. She plays the game very differently, much more old-fashioned almost, with all the spins and eye for the ball that she has, not just about ball banging, but she took Kerber to three sets, and you see these players just trying to get the rust out of their systems because they've all had the compulsory holiday in the Maldives. I mean, you're not allowed to be a tennis player, I don't think, unless you do that. And then they put the training block in, and as you were saying about Andy Murray, they all look a little bit heavy-legged and the timing isn't quite there, the reactions aren't what they will be in a week's time.
Yeah, it's funny that, isn't it? Because the off-season is so short. And apart from that, you know, 10 days they all spend in the Maldives, they all spend the rest of it practicing and in the gym. So it's strange that there should be that rust. If there was an actual proper off-season in tennis of sort of 3 months, I would entirely understand it. I mean, obviously, it does happen because it's not an accident. We see it in almost every player. But I always do find it a little bit strange that that occurs to that extent, because the off-season is short. We're talking, but I mean, how long realistically do these players actually take away from the tennis court in an off-season? 2 weeks? 2 weeks tops, maybe three if they're resting on their laurels. I mean, for me, that's long enough to get rusty. But for these guys, maybe it takes even less time at the elite level because of just what goes into it. But it I don't know, it always...
How do we explain our level of performance then in our match that we played 2 years ago, given that we played it in December?
There's no explaining it, David.
There was no rust in us, was there?
Lack of skill is how you explain that.
Oh, right. Okay, well, for the rematch, I'll make sure I'm at my peak. Sir Andy Murray. I've just realised we've been talking about him and we haven't mentioned that he's a sir. We're going to be hearing from Nigel Sears in the next portion of the tennis podcast. His father-in-law, Andy Murray's father-in-law, and a top tour coach for many years, of course, with Daniela Hantikova and Anna Ivanovic, who recently retired. We'll be hearing his thoughts about Ivanovic and Anne Kyotovong as Fed Cup captain. We'll ask him about Sir Andy Murray. Does he call him Sir Andy at the breakfast table? I want to know. We're going to ask him about that, and we'll get his thoughts on the tennis season in general. But Sir Andy Murray, Catherine, it's a subject that we discussed a couple of months ago when Murray got to world number one. It resulted in one of your most ferocious rants on the tennis podcast that I can remember. A personal favourite of mine, I must say.
I actually can't remember it. Could you give me the highlights so I could churn them out again?
Yes, the gist of it was that you thought it was preposterous that Andy Murray was getting a knighthood during his playing career, and that it should just wait until he was done, and that it was preposterous that people like me are going to refer to him as Sir Andy, and I'm going to.
No, you're not.
I've just done it.
You're not going to address him in person as Sir Andy, are you?
Why not?
Because you'd look like a goon, David, that's why.
Well,
I think the greater point here is that you'd make Andy Murray uncomfortable. I don't think you know what's going to be happening in all the locker rooms. He's going to walk in, and everyone's going to be taking the mickey out of him for being a sir. And yes, he can handle it, and that's fine. And that's not. I'm not saying he doesn't want it and isn't honoured by it. Of course he is. I'm just saying it's a total formality that he was going to get one. It doesn't add anything to the accomplishments he's already got. It doesn't, you know, those accomplishments are in the bag. This is just recognition of them. So he was going to get it either way. Why not just wait a few years? Why not wait? I don't understand it. I don't. But yeah, it's fine. I'm sure he's fine with it. I also am sure that had he been given the choice, he would have wanted it to wait. He's never, ever going to say that, because I do believe he is genuinely honoured and pleased to receive the honour. But why couldn't it have waited? What's the rush?
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I think the problem is that they've kind of created a rod for their own backs, haven't they? Because they've done it for other people who were certainly no more deserving than he is. And so they almost had to do it, really. I think you're probably right. I think he probably is a bit uncomfortable with it all. But at the same time, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world to have happen either. But I tell you, it interested me last night. I was having a look after his first match in Doha as to how he was referred to in the match reports. And the majority of reports were calling him Andy Murray. The Telegraph, our partners here on the Tennis Podcast, and the BBC were both referring him to him as Sir Andy Murray. He was called Sir Andy Murray on BBC Radio 5 Live in the news bulletins as well. So I wonder what I'm going to be calling him during my commentary in Australia.
But we don't call every... you know, Claire Balding wasn't introducing Sir Chris Hoy every evening in the velodrome during the Rio Olympics, was she? Maybe she was. Not that I'm sure I would have made a mental note of that if she was.
Well, Sir Bradley Wiggins gets a lot of that.
Yeah, but in news bulletins, he's not, you know, when a news bulletin about his questionable use of TUEs comes up, he's not introduced as Sir Bradley Wiggins, is he? He's just Bradley Wiggins.
What do you mean? You sort of make a decision based on the tone of the piece?
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe, but I can't believe that, you know, at every possible journalistic opportunity, these guys and girls are referred to as with their title.
Code violation, warning, racket abuse, Sir Andy Murray.
I mean, well, when you start putting it like that, it does sound preposterous, doesn't it? It sounds really, really preposterous.
Catherine Whittaker there with the view she expressed a couple of months ago with rather more vitriol and disgust, even than now. So do look that one up if you'd like to hear it. Catherine, should we hear from Nigel Sears now? This is an interview that I did a couple of nights ago. I arrived at BT Sport in the middle of the night, which is when we're commentating in the UK on the tournaments in Australia. And Nigel was good enough to have a chat here on the Tennis Podcast and to look forward to the new tennis season, starting with the possibilities and potential on the WTA circuit.
There are so many question marks about 2017. Firstly, what sort of Serena Williams are we going to see? Because she is the person that could take the whole thing by storm again. It's interesting to see that she's chosen to play Auckland early in the year, and she's down there, probably well prepared. I saw she won her opening match. We don't know yet. Is she going to stumble at the final hurdle again, as she did throughout 2016, really, with the exception of Wimbledon? But there are an awful lot of very good players. The depth is improving all the time in women's tennis. Elena Svitolina is one of those players who had a sensational back end of the year, in particular, very strong finish to 2016. She's so consistent, moves so well. She's almost a guaranteed quarterfinalist every week. So if that's your platform, good things can happen.
Talking to people that are pretty much guaranteed to make the quarterfinals, based on the last year, Johanna Konta has done that week in, week out. I think particularly impressed us that this time a year ago she was just about to embark on that semi-final run at the Australian Open, and then week after week she kept backing it up. But she has made some pretty significant changes in her coaching team in the off-season. That's a bit of a risk, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's kind of a shame after the year she had with Esteban Carril that partnership didn't continue. Obviously, only they know what really happened with that, but it was certainly a surprising change. She's had an outstanding, not 12 months, but 18 months. And the most impressive thing about Johanna and what she's achieved is the way that her level has just gone up several notches. And she's maintained that level against the very best players in the world. She had so many top 10 wins. She really has earned this ranking that she has at the moment. And she's another one that has such a strong base game that you can't really see her losing early in the tournaments. And she will also threaten the top players. Moves exceptionally well again, has great weight of shot. And her serve was superb throughout the year. Cheap points on the first serve, second serve, very difficult to attack, very heavy, and one of the better second serves on the tour.
Is the WTA finals a realistic possibility for her? Is a slam final a possibility for her?
well, she should have been there last year, shouldn't she? I mean, it was cruel the way that she didn't make the tour finals. Svetlana Kuznetsova, with that magnificent effort in the last few weeks of the season, just pipped her at the final post. And, you know, I was sure that Joe was going to be in the tour finals. So I think that, I mean, we saw a semi-finals of the Australian Open earlier in the year. I see her in the second week of most slams. Whether she can win one or not, well, who's to say she can't? I don't know that she's a firm favourite to win one, but I see her certainly contending, and I do think she could make the tour finals, yeah, because she's that good now.
Who else sort of stands out for you as players to watch? Because I suppose there's different levels, aren't there? There are players like we saw first-time winners at slams last year in Muguruza and Kerber. You've talked about Alina Svitolina as somebody who may be able to break into that bracket of top 10 with Joe Konta. And then there are younger players. We're going to do a match later today in our commentary, Daria Kasatkina, who is a rich talent and is trying to add to what she's got. Who do you think we're going to be looking out for this year, or who are you looking out for?
Well, if you look at the more established players that are there already, we talked about consistency. Well, Simona Halep and Agnieszka Radwanska haven't won slams yet, but, I mean, they're two of the most consistent players. Angie Kerber, how consistent has she been? I mean, can she match the kind of year she had?
That's a challenge, isn't it?
Well, very much so, but who's to bet against that? She works tremendously hard, and her game is just improving year on year out, and she's still going to take some beating, no doubt about it. If you look at those, there's quite a lot of those solid players. Suarez Navarro, another person who wins an awful lot of matches, again, narrowly missed the tour finals. We seem to be slightly worse off at the moment for the big strikers. I mean, of course, Petra Kvitova, I mean, what's happened to her? Absolutely horrendous, and really feel for her, because she finished the year in superb style and started to play the kind of tennis that we all know she's so capable of. And before she first got the stress fracture in her foot, and then secondly, that awful knife attack, I would have said that she is somebody to really watch for next year, because she played some great tennis at the back end of 2016. You've got to think that Garbiñe Muguruza, with her heavyweight game, should put it together more often in 2017. It was hard to believe last year that she did virtually nothing before the French Open, wins the French Open, and then does very little afterwards. Disappointing from her, really, when you felt she could have even been a contender for a number one as she went into last year. But that never really materialized. You'd think she would have a much better year this year. Dominika Sibulkova, I mean, what a bundle of energy she is, and just look at the level she produced in Singapore. She was amazing, especially in the final, and what a wonderful finish to the year for her. Let's go back to the Williams. I mean, Venus Williams played some great tennis still at her age. She seems to have an appetite to get out on that practice court and work as hard as she ever has done. She's in great shape, despite the Sjögren syndrome that she's had. Serena Williams can beat anybody on her day, and I still think she's the one to watch. In terms of the young players, well, Daria Kasatkina, you look at Yelena Ostapenko, you look at Anna Konya. I mean, these are three very exciting names. I think Monica Puig, let's put a question mark next to her. She won the Olympics, but you've got to feel that she could possibly break through right to the top end of the game if she can put that Olympic form, I mean, together and package it more regularly. We still put a question mark next to Sloane Stephens. She's getting a little older now, but she's still young. And what an athlete, and what a game she's got. I put another question mark next to Caroline Garcia. Got all the attributes of a top player. Wonderful physique, great talent, great game. But you just wish that she'd invest in a coach other than her father. Of course, there's a close relationship there, but she needs more. And I think that is holding her back a bit. I have to say that. I wouldn't be... Here's one from left field, which I know that you like to hear about.
Oh, yeah, well, definitely on this show.
Well, you know, at the top end of the game, Karolina Pliskova, great striker. But what about her sister starting to make inroads? She's the lefty. They were both very even as juniors. I see Kristina Pliskova moving up those rankings steadily, and it'll be very interesting to see how far she can go in 2017. But I like her game.
Well, you've given us plenty to think about there, Nigel. Because it's the first week of the year, and we see these players come onto the court, and I feel as though, particularly through your eyes, I can see you almost trying to assess how much work has gone in over the off season. And the off season, it's a vital time, isn't it? Because it seems to me that it almost separates the players. You find out really who's going to make the big move by how fit they are, how strong they are, the improvements that they've made. What is required in the off season?
Well, it's a question of investing that time to prepare yourself, not just for the start of the year, but it's a fitness block that is the best opportunity for all the players to put a base down to carry them through the entire season. Yes, you'll get another opportunity shortly after the grass court events. You get 2 to 3 weeks there where a lot of people try and cram in a bit more work to top things up. But the main block of physical work, the technical work to perhaps work on weaknesses in the game, that's when that's all done, during the back end of November and December. And it's always interesting at the beginning of each season to see who's put in the work and who hasn't. And tennis players come in all different shapes and sizes.
Can you tell? Can you tell when you see a player? Pretty much the way they're playing, the way they're carrying themselves?
I think you can always tell how hard someone's been working physically. I mean, also, of course, it's an opportunity to reflect on the ups and downs of the year, and from a mental perspective too, to readdress the attitudes and the way, the on-court demeanour, all this kind of thing. I mean, it's really review, reassessment and preparation for the upcoming season. It's a crucial time of the year.
One player that isn't doing an off-season and isn't playing the season at all is Anna Ivanovic, because she's taken the decision to retire. Obviously, a shame for all of those people that enjoy watching her play. You have worked with her on two occasions. You've spent the last 18 months working alongside her. How did that decision come about from your perspective? And how will you look back on the time that you spent coaching her?
Well, firstly, I think Anna's had a wonderful career. She's 29 years old. She's been playing 15 years. I mean, she started very young on the Pro Tour. She's won a Grand Slam. She's won 15 tour events, made the final of the Fed Cup. She'll always be remembered as one of the most exciting players to watch. I mean, spearheaded by that laser-like forehand, a very natural shot. A shot that at times was just pure genius. She could hit forehand winners from anywhere in the court. And on her day, and let's face it, it wasn't always Anna's day, which makes that match much more interesting as well. She's a very emotional player, wears her heart on her sleeve, and she had her ups and downs within games, within sets, within matches, and within phases of her careers. And you're never entirely sure of what was going to happen, but it was such a privilege to be courtside to watch some of those forehand winners and the sheer talent and ability that she had. A pleasure to work with, and she'll be missed. She really was a marquee player.
And I suppose over the last year, you would have seen the physical elements starting to become a problem for her and frustrating her.
Well, she had a lot of what I call niggling injuries, and take their toll after a time. And she just felt that she was battling against that an awful lot of the time. She missed a lot more tournaments back end of this year, last year. Of course, she did get married, and perspectives change in. I thought she, the first half of the year, she played some really good tennis. I remember her beating Simona Halep in Dubai, and she right through played well the first couple of rounds of the French, lost a disappointing match to Svitolina in the third round of the French, and made quarters in out in Mallorca just before Wimbledon, but blew out early in Wimbledon, and from that point on was never really the same. But obviously her mind by that stage was probably on the wedding. She had some physical issues, and I believe very strongly that it's every player's right to call time on their own career whenever they want to, and she certainly served her time. She decided the time was now just very recently, and good luck to her, and I wish her very well for everything that she does in her future, because it really was a pleasure to work with her.
Now, I'll just keep my voice down a bit here, Nigel, because we're at BT Sport at the moment. In the commentary box right now is the new Great Britain Fed Cup captain.
Annie Kay.
Now, she can't hear us unless she's listening back. What do you think of that decision? What sort of Fed Cup captain do you think she'll make? And from your perspective as somebody who's done the job, what's the important part of it?
Well, it's fascinating because when I was Fed Cup captain, I was working with Anne, and actually I was sitting on the chair when Anne was playing her Fed Cup matches, and I was involved with Anne on the tour for a good 4.5 years while I was at the LTA, so I know Anne very well. And she always showed tremendous courage as a player and was an exceptionally hard worker. You've got to remember she had 2 horrible knee injuries, tearing her anterior cruciate and going through surgery twice, and still came back from each one very strongly. I know exactly how hard she had to work to do that. And she came back and had some great wins and actually made, I think, 6 or perhaps 7 tour semi-finals. Played really, really well at her best, had a ferocious forehand herself. I think as captain, she's been there for one. She's experienced it all. She's played on the main tour. And she's tough and she's feisty. And I don't think she'll take any nonsense. And I think it's a strong appointment. And I think she has the credentials to really fit that role. And, of course, I wish her and the team well in February when they need to get out of that zone.
Final one, Nigel. Sir Andy Murray. How did that go down when you heard about it?
Well, okay. I mean, for him, I think he's already said he still feels like Andy. My daughter certainly feels like Kim. But I think it's very well deserved. He's had an exceptional year.
It's extraordinary, really, isn't it?
Outstanding.
What he did from sort of the last 3 months of the year is pretty mind-boggling, to get number one from a guy who'd been totally dominant for 6 months.
Well, I have huge respect. I mean, firstly, for how hard he worked, not just in the gym and off the court, but to play all those tournaments in a row and win all those tournaments at the back end of the year, you know, 1 week after the next, and then to beat Novak in the final at the O2. I don't think you can be... he couldn't have been accepted as a true number one unless he'd beaten Novak in a major final. And he did that to cap off the year when he must have been exhausted. And think about the 2 matches he played prior to that. In that tournament alone, not even thinking about the weeks before. I have the utmost respect for what he's achieved. Some might think it's a little young. He might even think he's a little young. He might have thought it might have come if he deserved it at the end of his career. But it's happened now. And, well, of course, we're all immensely proud of him.
You don't call him Sir Andy, do you?
I certainly don't, no.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So Nigel Sears, they're talking to us here on the Tennis Podcast. And no, he's not going to be calling him Sir Andy at the breakfast table. Just imagine that, though. Sir Andy, any chance you could pass me the butter? That wouldn't have worked, would it? I don't think. You'd probably get a slap if you did that.
Ever more preposterous.
Catherine, Anne Kiotthavong is being the Fed Cup captain is something we haven't discussed yet here on the show because we didn't do so last week and the news was announced in late November. She is somebody that I've certainly got to know pretty well working with on BT Sport. She's fairly recently retired in the last, well, 3 years ago, wasn't it? And she's current in that way. But personally, I would share Nigel's view. I think she is somebody that will be a strong captain. I think she's exactly the right candidate.
Yeah, she's a very strong character. I've worked with her on Live at Wimbledon. I like her very much. She's incredibly nice and personable, but yet, you know, I wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of her. It's the same as sort of how I feel about Tim Henman, really, which I know comes as a real surprise because that's not his public persona. Everyone thinks he's sort of a bit of a damp rag. But actually, I really wouldn't want to be on the wrong side of either of them. I think she's really, really not going to take any rubbish from anyone. And I think those are the skills required in that job. She's not going to be a pushover. Everyone will like her and want to work for her, want to perform for her. But at the same time, she's not going to be taken for a ride. She's not going to be taken advantage of. And I think those are the right sort of attributes to have in that role.
Now, Catherine, incidentally, very quick note as well on what Nigel was saying about Kristina Pliskova. She is due to play Johanna Konta overnight tonight, depending on when you're listening to this. I'm very interested to see how that goes because Kristina has taken a little while longer to come through than Carolina. Maybe she never will, but left-hander, huge serve, definitely worth watching out for her. Catherine, new year, what is your 2017 tennis wish?
The end of pole vault.
Sorry, that's coming up after this. That's coming up after 27 tennis wish, so you can't have that.
Okay, my 2017 tennis wish is for Roger Federer to win one last Grand Slam. Please.
Okay. All right.
There's lots of other things I would like to happen.
Why do you want that?
Because it would be the best story ever. There would not be a dry eye in the house. What do you mean, what? I mean, that. What a facetious question. You know why. Who in tennis doesn't want that? The hard-hearted, that's who.
Well, fans of other players, surely. I mean, not
There's
everybody's
enough.
A Roger
Other players
fan.
Can have a go. There are three others up for grabs. There are more after 2017, which everyone else will be around for. Roger Federer might only have 2017. Just let him have one, all right?
Well, hold on a minute. I seem to remember Andy Roddick standing there in 2009 on the Wimbledon Centre Court when he'd just been beaten. And he was like, well, hold on a minute. You're saying you know how I feel. You've won 17 of these things, for goodness sake. How many more do you need?
It's not about the number. It's about one last one. I'm not sure I quite follow that argument, David. I was supporting Andy Roddick on that day. I was devastated when he lost. That's neither here nor there. The facts are as they are. He's kept going. He's done wonderful things for tennis. And his winning a 18th and final slam would be one of the best sporting stories our sport has ever seen. And I want to see it.
Well, you're very much entitled to your 2017 tennis wish. I hope it comes true for you.
You wouldn't like that to happen, David.
Do you know what? I actually, the way you said it there is pretty convincing and pretty, you've won me over with that. It would be amazing. I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit. I think it would
I'm also not sure I've ever seen my brother cry, and I'm pretty sure that Federer winning an 18th slam would elicit that reaction. So double whammy.
Well, that's an even better reason. I mean, absolutely brilliant reason. Now, you know what? It would be amazing, I think, for the sport generally to have him do that. And I think he does deserve it. Do I think it'll happen? I don't. Do you think it'll happen?
I am completely unable to separate head from heart when it comes to this one. I've proven in the past. Look, I don't think it is. I don't think it's likely in that I don't think it's sort of more than 50% chance that it'll happen. I don't think it's highly unlikely either. I certainly think it's within the realms of possibility. It's not likely, but I really think it could.
Wow.
It's about sort of the same level of probability as
Andy Murray finishing last year world number one?
Yeah, probably. Nick Kyrgios winning a slam, something like that.
Oh, really? Well, that's interesting. That's very interesting. That'll be coming up in pole vault, Catherine. So, I can tell you're just building up to that moment. My 2017 tennis wish is something we asked you about on Twitter, @tennispodcast. Rachel Butcher from Stockport in England says she wants Sir Andy Murray to finally get his hands on an Australian Open title. Well, we'll find out over the next few weeks, won't we? Tevin, 20 years old from Leicester, a Man United fan, says wants Nadal to win a slam, wants Serena, Sybil over and Muguruza to win big titles as well. Gary Harper, who likes eating, says he wants to see serve and volley tennis make a real reintroduction into the game. I've actually noticed, Catherine, I think it is coming more and more into the game again. You know, I think players are realising, I think the cyclical thing is starting to take place where people realise can't beat Djokovic and Murray from the back of the court alone. I think the variety is coming back into the sport. Mark, a librarian, says he wants Murray at the Australian Open and Federer and Sybil Kova to win slams. Bridget Kelly, who spends her time watching tennis and AFL when she should be studying, she says, would like Tanasi Kokkinakis to play at least two slams this year. I think that's a great one. There's Kokkinakis. He's had 15 months out of the game with that horrible shoulder problem, and he's missed, I think.
Oh, he's horrible. It's awful what's happened to him, having to have surgery as a teenager and on such a crucial part of his body. I think he made probably some quite naive decisions last season, from what I can gather. His playing the Olympics was ill-advised. He tried to come back too soon and has extended his time out of the game. But still, he's really young and he doesn't deserve all these setbacks. And unlike some of the young, talented Australian players, he has a really good head on his shoulders. He's a really good kid, and he would be great for tennis if he can make a breakthrough.
I'm hearing he still hasn't got over your interview with him when you asked him about the Kardashian family. Anyway, Jill from Liverpool says she wants Novak Djokovic back at world number one and to win Cincinnati to complete the Masters Series slam. And finally,
it could happen.
They could.
I think Djokovic really wants Cincy. I do.
Yeah, I think he's going to be super pumped up again this year. I think. He needed the shock to the system. I think of losing the top spot to get that hunger back. I think it's pretty normal that sort of emotion. Vipul in Delhi finally would like to see Nadal complete La Decima. Imagine that, 10th Roland Garros crown. Imagine that.
I mean, that would
talk about not a dry eye in the house. Wow.
Yeah, that would be good too. All of these things sound really good.
Let's have them all, please. My one, actually.
I'd love Dominika Sybilkova to win a slam.
Yeah,
just going
she's
back
a joy.
To, I think, the
she
first,
is a joy to watch.
The first person. Yeah, I would absolutely love that.
I would say for me, I just want to see all of these players playing fit, healthy, and near to the best. I'd love to see one more year of Nadal and Federer playing really well, Serena playing really well, and the rest of them standing up to the challenge. I'm not really that bothered who wins the titles. I just want to see great spectacles. I want to see the sport at its best. There you go.
That's the most David Law answer there has ever been. Do you know that?
What does that mean?
I just want everyone to have a nice time.
Hey.
You're so nice, David. You make me look bad.
All right, steady. I'm not that nice. I tell you, you should see what I... No, I won't. Pole vault, Catherine. You know, if I was that nice, I'd have stopped pole vault and stopped putting you
that's
through this.
True.
But
that's
no,
true.
I won't. Roses are with me on that as well. Will Nick Kyrgios make the ATP finals this year? What do you think? 730 votes.
No.
57% of people agree with you. 43% say he will.
Okay.
He played a rally yesterday in which he hit two tweeners in the same point. And midway through, when there was a lob going up, he actually did a pirouette, which he didn't need to do, just to show off a bit more. It was amazing. Anyway, it doesn't necessarily mean he'll make the ATP finals, of course. Alex Zverev, ranking this time next year will it be top 5, 6 to 10, 11 to 20, or 21 to 100? 752 votes.
He is making fast strides, isn't he? I certainly think he'd be top 20, easy. I think he'll be top 15. It's just a question of whether he gets top 10. I think top 5 is too soon. I think he'll be between 5 and 15, probably just outside the top 10.
59% say 11 to 20. So the majority is with you, Catherine. 29% think he'll be 6 to 10. Just 3% think he'll be top 5. 9% think he'll still be 21 to 100. And we've got a 1 week from the tennis season. I did this one a week ago. Who wins the Australian Open women's title? Will it be Angelique Kerber, Serena Williams, or someone else? 575 votes.
Someone else.
Oh, 38% agree with you. Only 31% think that Serena will win and 31% think Kerber will win. So more people think that someone else will win. The most popular choices were you don't care, do you? Most popular choices were Radvanska, Pliskova, Halep and Konta. Those were the four getting the shouts. Now, one that you will actually care about, Catherine Whittaker, here on the Tennis Podcast. Pole vault, have we seen the best of Grigor Dimitrov? 654
votes. I'd be
very
sad if the answer to that question is yes.
That's not one of the options.
Have we seen the best of him? No.
46% believe no, that we haven't seen the best of him yet. 54% think that we have seen the best of him. I'm with you. I think no. I think he's going to come again and do even better than he did with the semi-final at Wimbledon. And now, which of these two will retire with two more, Catherine? Which of these two? I did run. You know, by the way, I did a pole vault while you were off, Catherine, and I could kind of get away with it. I did a pole vault to ask how many pole vaults I'd run in the off season. Do you want to know the answer to that?
I don't at all.
21.
No.
21 pole vaults I ran in the off-season. Anyway, here's one of them. Which of these two will retire with the career slam? Stan or Murray? Both or neither? Stan's got three of the four already. Murray's got two of the four.
Yeah,
career slam,
I
which
don't
one?
See Wawrinka winning Wimbledon, I have to say. I would be more surprised if Wawrinka won Wimbledon than if Murray won the French and the Australian. I've said this before, I'm deja vuing myself. I can't believe Andy Murray won't win an Australian Open in his career. So then it comes down to, is Murray more likely to win a French than Stan is to win a Wimbledon? And I would say on balance, yes. However, I think probably just the most likely scenario is that neither completes the career slam.
And that is the most popular selection from our listeners at Tennis Podcast. 44% think that neither will win the career slam. 41% think that Murray will. 6% think both will. And 9% think just Stan will. I know Chris Clary thinks that Murray will fall short at the French Open, that he'll get an Australian Open. Chris Clary from the New York Times, you can pretty much take that as read that this will happen if he says so. But that's fascinating. Fascinating, isn't it? And I don't know. I think he's going to do it. I think Murray will win both of the other two tournaments at once in his career.
You just said what Chris Clary says is gospel.
Well, I've changed my mind. You know, Chris Clary. I know more than Chris Clary. All right. So, you know, I've said he'll win both of them. before he retires, and he'll complete the career slam. Stan won't. I don't think Stan will win Wimbledon. I'm with you on that one. So that's just about it, Catherine Whittaker, on the pole vault scene. Enjoyable?
Brilliant, David. A pleasure, as always.
Excellent. Now, folks, just before we go...
Can I go back to my migraine now?
Yeah, oh yeah, I should say that Catherine, I mean... I don't know whether this was just coincidence. We were supposed to record this show 24 hours ago, and I said to Catherine, I'll tell you what, I'll do the agenda for the podcast, the talking points. I'll do the, and we're having pole vault on this week because Catherine was presenting last week and I wasn't allowed to have it. And I said, so I'll put pole vaults, I'll get those all together. Within an hour, Catherine Whittaker had announced that she'd got a migraine and wouldn't be able to record.
I'd been struck down in my prime, yeah. So, I'm sure the two things are unrelated, David.
Okay. Oh, I hope so. Anyway, before we
no
go...
No link
just
to, has been medically proven. Let's
no link yet. We should also say that Racquet magazine, the print-only tennis magazine that came out a few months ago with its first edition, fantastic cover, by the way, if you haven't seen that, a beautiful picture of Yannick Noah on the front of that. The second edition is about to come out. It has features in it, including one on up-and-comers Dominic Thiem and Naomi Osaka. The Osaka one sounds fascinating. The Woman Without a Country by Louisa Thomas is in Racquet magazine edition 2. There's something on the Obama and Serena years, an essay by Ivy Pachoda. There's a UK-centric look at the dual life of Fred Perry clothing. That's an interesting one, isn't it? I like wearing Fred Perry polo shirts. I look completely ridiculous, but anyway, I like wearing them. And there's various other things. There's including something on a look at civil war within the squash community. Have you ever played squash, Catherine? I find it quite hard.
No, much to my dad's chagrin. No, my dad's a very good squash player, and he has desperately tried to get me into squash many times in my childhood. I just never quite took to it.
Could you imagine me? But, I mean, I've played squash, and I mean, it's like locking up a giraffe. It's not a good sight.
One of the questions, in fact, that Federer was asked in his Periscope session, when he Periscoped his practice session, was whether he plays squash. And I think he said he did. In fact, yes, he did say he played squash, but he didn't play badminton. I think that's the way around it was. Stefan Edberg became a very good squash player after he retired. Fun fact, I think he was the Swedish number one vet squash player, in fact. There you go. Fun fact.
Fun fact related to Racquet magazine edition 2, which is going to be available very soon. Go to racquetmag.com, spelt the proper way, RACQUET mag.com, and you can subscribe on there. And don't forget, if you want to have daily editions of the tennis podcast at the Grand Slams, we get in there, folks. We're more than 70% of the way there. You're already going to get your weekly editions. And if you want to go to Kickstarter.com and search for Tennis Podcast, you can back us on there. You've got to do so before the 13th of January, / 14th, depending on where you are in the world. Catherine, go and get back to your migraine then.
I will. Consider it done.
Okay. Nice to talk to you, and lovely to talk to you all. Have a good week. We'll speak to you soon.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.